Hey, y'all, and welcome back to the Magic Story Podcast. I'm your host, Harless.
And I'm your other host, Natalie.
In case you don't know, the Magic Story Podcast recaps the fiction story behind the card game Magic the Gathering, adding in just a touch of our own flavor text as we go. We are in Season 8, following the story of Outlaws of Thunder Junction.
Today's episode is Main Story Episode 2, titled The Jailbreak, and it's written by Akemi Don Bowman.
Don your hat and giddy up as we head into the multiverse.
All right, so a really quick recap as to what happened last episode during our premiere of Outlaws of Thunder Junction. We started off the season with a character named Archie Dixon, and he was given a mysterious bag by an offworlder and was ambushed in the desert by a giant, terrifying dragon named Akul. And Akul is leader of a gang called the Hellspurs, and essentially Akul ambushed Archie Dixon and everyone guarding him and killed everybody in search of something. And we're not really sure what this something is. All that we know is that Akul is ready to kill for it. We also were introduced to a brand new character for this season named Annie Flash. And she is a former outlaw kind of hiding out in an old ranching town in the middle of Thunder Junction Desert. And trying to kind of put her past behind her. And she was approached by our Fae Planeswalker, Oko, last episode. And Oko kind of had a proposition for her. He offered her revenge against Akul, because apparently Annie and Akul have some bad history between them. And Annie ultimately decided that she wanted to keep her past in the past and refused Oko's offer. But he did give her a little slip of paper that said, if you change your mind, here's where you can find me. And then we ended last episode with our good friend Kellen. And he has grown up quite a bit since we saw him in the beginning of Wilds of Eldraine. And he is here on Thunder Junction. And he has been assigned security detail to our other planeswalker, Ral Zarek, as he's going to this city called Prosperity to be able to chat with the Sterling Company and figure out what's next in terms of utilizing the Omen Paths for Ravnica's greater good. So that's kind of where we left off.
The multiverse is greater good, right? Like, yes. That's what's so cool about it is, you know, he really wants to, of course, control who can come in and out of his own plane of Ravnica. But really, this impacts the entirety of the multiverse. So there's a lot at stake here. So we start off today with our friend Annie Flash from the last episode. She's our new character for this season. She's a former outlaw hiding out in Saddlebrush, but she clearly cares a lot about the townsfolk here, and she's trying to put her past behind her. However, Oko's words are haunting her.
And this is directly from the story. Maybe Oko was bluffing. Maybe he got lucky, finding her out here in the wastes. Maybe history wasn't doomed to repeat itself. But Annie just couldn't take the chance.
So, unable to sleep, Annie wrenches out of bed and gets into her riding gear, braiding her hair and shrugging on her jacket as she leaves the house. She counts 100 paces away from her door and starts to dig with a shovel into some sort of grave, it seems like. But instead of a body, thank goodness, she digs up a box. And in the story, it says, Annie dug up the surrounding earth until the top of a wooden box was visible. She knelt low, unbuckled the sides, and pulled the lid back to reveal her thunder rifle. Nostalgia rippled through her, taking the air right out of her lungs. Annie picked up the weapon, running her fingers over the familiar metal frame, and slung the strap over her shoulder.
This must be hard for her to kind of resurrect her past here. There's clearly some old traumas, but it looks like Annie is taking the job after all. And so she calls for fortune out into the pasture lands, and she saddles up and heads off into the desert. And while she's doing this, she checks the matchbook Oko gave her for directions to where she can find him. And this matchbook tells her to meet at the Wild Card Saloon in Rustwood. And Rustwood is a place she'd never been before, but was one of the many failed ranching towns across the desert.
As Annie canters into Rustwood, the town first appears abandoned, but before she can become too concerned, a screech sounds from the saloon. Annie swung her rifle toward the sound, spotting a small skeleton creature, his bones wobbling in strange directions and his jaw twisted with wild glee. A few paces behind him was a furry blue goblin, chest puffed and eyes filled with rage. Now, the little skeleton creature, as we're about to find out, is a character named Tiny Bones. And I think the entirety of the studio at Magic is obsessed with Tiny Bones.
Yes, me included. Me included. I absolutely love Tiny Bones. I mean, he's like, he's a very short, like, I want to say he's like maybe a foot or two tall. Like, he's very short. He's a very tiny being. And he is all skeleton. Like, he, like, his name is very apt. He is a tiny bunch of bones. And he doesn't speak in a language that anyone can really understand, but he's clearly speaking in a language. He's clearly intelligent, but he's just so gleeful and mischievous. Like, mischievous, I think, is the perfect word to describe Tiny Bones. Like, he's a little thief. He will come up and start raiding your pockets. And he has this really cool ability to be able to kind of disassemble himself and then reassemble himself, like, within a matter of seconds. So, like, all of his bones can come off and it doesn't hurt him. So I absolutely love Tiny Bones because he's just so funny.
I don't know if it's just me. But every time Tiny Bones, like, collapses into a pile of bones and then reassembles back into Tiny Bones, I just hear a xylophone in my head.
Yes. Yes. Like the do-do-do-do-do-do. Yeah. I picture every
Absolutely.
Time.
Yes.
Now, the blue goblin chasing Tiny Bones, this is Breaches. Yes, as in Lost Caverns of Ixalan, Big Boom, Breaches, who took out the Mycotyrant in that season. Malcolm himself, the winged siren, quickly bursts out of the saloon behind Breaches to break up the mayhem with Tiny Bones. And Annie just watches all of this unfold with what I can imagine must be, what in tarnation's going on?
Care for a drink? Oko's voice sounded from behind the bar. When Annie turned to look at him, his eyes were creased with mischief. Annie lowered her thunder rifle and slung the weapon back over her shoulder. You know fine well this isn't a social call, she said, dusting her hands against her coat. She bobbed her chin toward the strangers still squabbling in the middle of the saloon. Friends of yours? Oko leaned over the counter like he was sharing a secret. They're part of the team I was telling you about.
With Breaches and Tiny Bones still fighting, where Tiny Bones seems to be in the habit of stealing Breaches' treasure, which we know the goblin is very possessive about, Oko introduces Annie to the rest of the crew, kind of scattered around the saloon. And this is from the story. A man and a woman sat at opposite sides of a table, their eyes an identical shade of pale gray, with the former wearing a leather and glass eye patch across the left side of his face. Sitting on a piano bench was a woman with striking white hair and an elegance that was equal parts beautiful and terrifying. And perched on one of the mismatched barstools was a gorgon covered in green scales with a mess of long snake-like tendrils for hair.
Okay, so we're going to unpack that. But first, I just want to say, if anyone ever describes me, kindly say that I have an elegance that was equal parts beautiful and terrifying.
Right?
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
I would like that in any future, like, bio that is written about me. Okay, just getting that out there. Okay. So the first two people in this passage, the gray-eyed siblings, are the necromancers Gisa and Gerolf. The white-haired woman sitting elegantly on the piano bench is a very familiar face to us. This is none other than Ariette, you know, the witch from Eldraine, the one who was putting everyone to sleep, responsible for the wicked slumber, the one who turned Rowan bad. She's here.
This kind of blew my mind, to be honest. Like, I cannot picture Ariette in a saloon on Thunder Junction. The image is just kind of ridiculous in the best way.
So the second that I found out Ariette was in the set, I immediately had to look up what, if there's any art at all of Ariette in the set. And there is, which is so exciting. And the reason I wanted to do that is because I agree, Natalie, I cannot visualize Ariette outside of, like, in her fairy tale costume in this, like, desert world. Like, that seems impractical, to say the least, right? And so, oh, I was not disappointed by this costuming. It is okay. I'm gonna do my best to describe this to you.
It's so cool.
What's great is that it is very clearly inspired by, like, a saloon girl outfit. And what I mean by that is, like, it's very like, it's got the kind of corseted top that has a design on the fabric. So it's like black on black, but it's like a matte black on like a shiny black, or vice versa, right? So you can actually see that there's like filigree and imagery there. And it looks very floral to me. And then she has that really silken long skirt with a real big slit up it that's got a ruffle on it. The bottom of her corset has a ruffle on it. And then she has this choker, a ribbon choker on her neck, around her neck, which is so quintessential to, which is so reminiscent of the Wild West. But then, because she's Ariette, it's not going to stop there. No. That's not it. There are these mirror-like shards on her collar. So remember in Wilds of Eldraine, she has that big cracked mirror collar. Here, she still has a mirrored collar, and you can still see in the mirrored collar that she isn't what she appears to be. You see an old woman crone kind of style face in the reflection in her collar, and then her face appears to you as just a beautiful young woman. She's got her hair all pinned up, just like you would in that era, where it's kind of like, it's like loosely pinned, so it's got little tendrils falling down, and there's like, you know, you can tell she put some curlers in there. But the costuming itself also has not only these mirror shards that come out from her collar on the top and then on the bottom as well, like the kind of face downward, but the entirety of this corset is rimmed in gold. And So Ariette might be in the Wild West, but she did not forget to slay. She did not forget to wear the best possible outfit she
came
she could find.
The best wardrobe she possibly could have into Thunder Junction.
Yes. Like, you know, she's magical, so, like, we don't know this. We don't know if she has a seamstress or if she just magicked this out of thin air, but I would love to believe that she just magicked, that she walked onto the plane, saw what the high fashion was on the plane, and then snapped this amazing outfit into existence. Like, that's what I'd like to think. Again, total speculation. Now, as mind-blowing as it is that Ariette is here, the last person that you just mentioned in that description, Natalie, is what really blew my mind. A Gorgon with snake-like tendrils of hair, which we know is Vraska.
Wait, what?
I know. Okay, so if you all recall, Vraska has been missing since the end of the Phyrexian invasion. The last we'd seen of her, like, at all, literally any speck of information we've gotten about her, is that she had been full-blown Phyrexianized by Elish Norn. She nearly destroyed Ravnica. She was killed by Ral Zarek, and then had mysteriously gone missing, and no one has seen or heard from her since. But now she's here on Thunder Junction, definitely not Phyrexianized.
How? What the, like, how? I am burning with the need to know. Don't get me wrong. I'm so ecstatic to see Vraska. But I have so many questions. You can't just throw that at me and not question what happened. How?
Yeah, I think all of us have that question. And, like, my speculation at this moment is that, you know, much like the other planeswalkers that were Phyrexianized when the Phyrexians fell, she potentially fell into that same coma-like state that the others fell into. But that still doesn't answer our question. Right? How did she get out of that? Because The only reason that Johnny and Nissa and everybody else were able to get out of that like stupor was because Malira came in and sacrificed herself to use the last of her healing abilities to do so. So what? Like, this is just wild. But unfortunately, we are not given any answers right now. Okoop doesn't really care. And Annie's never met Vraska before. So the topic just doesn't come up in the scene. But we, the readers, are definitely squirming with the same burning questions, seeing Vraska again. And she's part of Oko's crew for some reason. So, yeah, just so many questions here.
After introducing everyone, Oko turns to Annie and tells her that once he reveals what his plan is, she's stuck with them. So this is her last chance to turn back. And ultimately, Annie says, "I'm in, but only as far as stopping a Cool. Anything beyond that's got nothing to do with me or my town. You hear?" Oko beamed. "I accept your conditions. Now, would you like to hear what the job is?" Annie grimaced, waiting.
"We're going to rob Mog Terra now," he said at last. Annie blinked. Oh, she'd heard of it, all right. The only structure on Thunder Junction that supposedly predated the Omen Paths. You dragged me all the way out here for a fairy tale? Vraska's tendril hair rose in response. Ariette pursed her lips. And I'm going to pause right there because I loved this. Ariette pursed, like, Ariette hearing, like, you dragged me out here for a fairy tale. Like, Wilds of Eldraine is so fairy tale.
Yes, Ariette's I love just, like, that
excuse
flavor.
Excuse me.
Yeah. It was so good.
Like, there's more to fairy tales than I think you know, Annie, which is fair. There definitely is. And then Annie continues, plenty of folks have come through Omenport searching for the vault, only to turn right back around empty-handed. Annie shook her head. It's nothing more than a myth. I assure you, Mog Terranau is very real, a voice echoed from above.
That last voice who spoke is Ashiok. I mean, I kind of suspected they'd be here since Ariette is, but at least that mystery is solved. So remember at the end of Wilds of Eldraine, Ashiok and Ariette had set off on some sort of mysterious, nefarious sounding quest? I can only imagine it was this, to come here in search of the vault. Ashiok reveals that Akul and the Hellspurs have built a fortress around the vault in hopes they could control it themselves. This fortress is called Tarnation.
But Akul cannot access the vault itself because it's locked by 6 parts of a key. He already has 5 parts, and he only needs 1 more. And this is what he thought Archie Dixon had acquired at the very beginning of last episode, which is why he, like, you know, burned his carriage to the ground and left him there for dead.
The vault. Annie's voice trailed off, and she met Oko's gaze. What's inside? Raw power! Breeches screamed, making some of the others jump. What's inside Mog Terranau doesn't concern the team, Ashiok countered. They are acting on my behalf to break into the vault, and they will be paid well for it, as will you. The treasure is mine alone.
I am not sure that I like the thought of Ashiok acquiring anything powerful. Like, whatever is inside this vault is clearly really important. I mean, I don't want Akul to have it either, but I definitely don't want Ashiok to have it. Now, Annie is thinking on the same wavelengths. She isn't in a position to question or argue right now, though. They have to stop Akul. That's her mission. The other details will just have to be handled as they get to them. So Annie turns to Oko and asks where they should start looking for the final key piece and prevent Akul from getting it. And Oko says here that the last key is currently at the Sterling Company headquarters in possession of a man named Bertram Greywater.
So the crew is going to their headquarters in Prosperity to not only steal this key, but break 2 more members of their crew out of jail while they're at it. No big deal. The last member of the crew joins them just then in the saloon. A being so huge, it rattles the ground. It is Rakdos. Yes, as in the Rakdos, the demon god from Ravnica.
You know, the one that was totally asleep with dust covering
yes,
him at the
just
end
last
of Murders
season.
At Carlove Manor.
Yeah. Like, so, obviously he woke up.
I don't know how he got here. Yeah, definitely woke up. Definitely.
Did Oko go in and just convince Rakdos? Like, did he go into Rakdos' domain? I'm trying to picture Oko going into Hellbender and, like, trying to convince Rakdos to join his crew on Thunder. Like, I was just so surprised that Rakdos woke up. First of all, he's awake, very awake, and that he decided to join this crew for Oko. It's like, I am like, this group is such a most random, eclectic bunch across the multiverse that I just kind of chuckled over, like, this sounds like a group that under normal circumstances would never, ever get along, but they're under a common goal. And together,
money.
I really, yeah, money. I really wonder what sort of chaos they could stir up here. Like, this is quite a group. But Rakdos, we didn't get a chance to really describe Rakdos last season, so we're going to kind of dive into it a little bit here. Rakdos is giant. He is a huge, very, very tall demon. And he is truly, like, kind of a demon in structure. He's got, like, huge wings. He can fly. He's got a horned head with glowing red eyes. He has, like, almost normal clawed hands, but his feet are hoofed. And he's got this long barbed tail. Like, he's kind of what you would picture as a classic sort of demon. And as we know, Rakdos is the god of like destruction and chaos. And he is like Rakdos is named like the guild in Ravnica is named after Rakdos for a reason. And they embody that, like their colors are black and red, and they kind of embody that chaos and destruction sort of mentality. And that's why he was kind of satiated by the pact on Ravnica, that the cult of Rakdos would do Rakdos's doing on his behalf. And it was an agreement over Rakdos could slumber, and the guild, the cult of Rakdos, would kind of continue his work. That was the agreement to keep peace on Ravnica. So the fact that he is awake is concerning,
to say the least. And what I love about his design is that he has these like leathers wrapped around his wrists with spikes coming out of them and chains coming off of them. He has a giant belt buckle of the Rakdos symbol, which is so cool. I just absolutely love that. And he has these glowing, they're not really axes. I don't know exactly how to describe these. They're like almost like between an axe and a sickle.
Yeah.
But they're like flaming red hot. Yeah. Sickle axe, you know, one of those. And I'll read this from the story. A demon, necromancers, assassins, and thieves. Annie had the distinct feeling that she was in over her head. But the moment she dug up her thunder rifle, she'd known what would happen. She was going to do whatever it took to stop Akul, even if it meant aligning herself with a crew like this. Annie had made her choice, and there was no turning back.
In over her head. I'm with you, Annie. Like, if I was in the saloon, I would be, what is going to happen?
I would have walked right back out. I'm going to be honest. I'd have been like,
that probably would have been the smart call. Yeah.
Yeah. One look at that crew. No thanks. I'm good.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just going to move my town somewhere else. It's fine. Don't worry.
I'm going to hop back on Fortune and head back home. I'm sorry. I don't got anything to do with this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Annie has
best
more courage
y'all,
than you.
But yes.
So,
absolutely.
From here, we fast forward a bit in time, and we're behind Oko's perspective now. They are in Prosperity, the city where the Sterling Company headquarters is located, and he is disguised as a courier, since he can shapeshift into different forms. And he carries a package kind of under his arm, and in the box is Tiny Bones rattling around.
Breaches, Malcolm, Braska, and Rakdos waited beyond the city by a ridgeline for the signal. It's up to Oko to sneak inside headquarters, which he does with the help of his shapeshifting abilities. And meanwhile, Annie and Ariette are working their way into the dungeons to jailbreak the remaining members of the crew. Ariette uses a potion on the guards to make them immediately love-struck with her and distract them enough for Annie to locate the occupied cells. There is an illusion on all of the cells that makes them appear empty, which is why Oko needed Annie's help in the first place. And she, with her eye, her magical eye, she's able to easily locate the occupied ones where these other crew members are sitting.
And these two final crew members is Karvek on one side of the room and Satoru Umezawa on the other. And both of these characters, Karvek and Umezawa, clearly detest one another and start bickering almost as soon as Annie spots them. Ariette, having fetched the keys from the very obliging guards, frees both Karvek and Umezawa from their magical shackles as well. And I'll read this from the story. Karvek rolled a bright orange flame in his palm, eyes beginning to glow. I am ready to break free of this dungeon. What chaos shall we unleash on our captors as we turn their castle into a wasteland of ash and bone? And I think that just gives you a sense of who this character is.
Oh, yeah. There's no time for any of that, I'm afraid, Ariette said. We'll leave the way we came in without drawing unnecessary attention. Except for Umezawa. The corners of her mouth twitched. I believe Oko requires your assistance. He's somewhere in the building, though I'm not sure exactly where. The tattoos near Umezawa's neck began to shift across his skin. I'll find him, he said, and moved for the shadows without another word. And Annie and Ariette follow the passage out of the dungeons to rejoin the rest of their crew, having successfully completed their part of the mission.
So we're back with Oko after this, and he successfully sneaks Tiny Bones into Bertram Greywater's office. And this is due to Tiny Bones, as we said, being able to dissemble and reassemble himself in seconds. That is a very handy skill of his for getting into places normal folks can't get into, like Greywater's office. And so while Oko is searching for Greywater's hiding place of where he put this key, Umezawa appears in the room, silent as a wraith. He tells Oko the hiding place is behind the portrait on the wall, and this reveals a safe once Oko takes the portrait down. Oko produces an object of Umezawa's, something he said he'd taken the liberty to fetch for him after he went through his things, which, come on, Oko, rude.
I have a feeling Oko does not care that he's being rude. I don't think Oko ever cares about being rude.
Yeah, obviously not. But Umezawa clearly does. We're getting the hint that Umezawa is kind of a private person. Like, he's ruffled pretty easily, and he does not like the idea of Oko going through his things. But this object turns out to be a mechanism that unfolds and moves kind of like a spider, and it latches on and kind of hacks into the safe's lock. After several moments, there was a loud clunk, and the door swung open. There was a small burlap bag propped against several thick books. A smile stretched across Oko's face. He reached inside and pulled out a small artifact that looked otherworldly. While most of the metal seemed blackened with time, some parts of it gleamed in fluorescent hues. The sixth key.
Oko quickly hides the key on the inside of his coat, and he, Tiny Bones, and Umezawa make their way out of headquarters without being seen. But when they're halfway up the street outside, they run across someone they didn't expect, which happens to be Raoul Zarek. They'd never met before, but Oko recognized the man's face. He was well known on Thunder Junction, a planeswalker, just like Oko. Except it wasn't Raoul who made Oko stop in his tracks, nor was it the burly armed guard that seemed hungry for a fight. It was the boy with messy black hair and pointed ears. The fae magic that ran through their veins, it was easy to sense. Judging by the look on the boy's face, he recognized Oko's magic, too.
Is it happening?
Yeah.
Is it happening?
Yeah. Okay. I, like, literally was holding my breath reading this. I was like, is it? Like, what's going to happen next? Right? Like, this is not how I expected them to meet at all.
No.
Like, I don't know why. I just did not expect, like, this super chance encounter. So Kellen's fae presence is such a shock for Oko that his illusion drops and Oko loses focus on his shape-shifting. Raoul is obviously floored and confused as to this unknown man, a fae, suddenly appearing in front of him, and Raoul's guards lunge for Oko, but Oko and his crewmates manage to slip away. And that's because Kellen, obviously, is frozen in shock, right? There's like the fight, flight, or freeze response, and Kellen chose freeze here. He just he's shocked. He doesn't know what to do. So Oko gets all the way to the ridge where the rest of the crew is waiting, and Raoul orders his Sterling guards to go after him, but Kellen appears before Oko first, floating in on his golden fey magic, and sputters out, "I don't want to fight you," before Oko has a chance to rally a defense. And what's most surprising here is that Oko actually hesitates.
And so right here, Kellen manages to get out that he's been searching for Oko and reveals that he is Oko's son. Oko stared, unsure whether he'd heard him correctly. "My mother is Elise," the boy said. "My name is Kellen." Oko had heard as many lies as he'd told in his lifetime, enough to know that the boy was telling the truth. He remembered Elise well, and Kellen. But unfortunately, this reunion is interrupted right here by the Sterling guards charging into the scene. A fight breaks out, and Kellen, he's working with the Sterling guards, and he decides to defend his father instead. He attacks the Sterling guards with his golden vines, and much to the shock of both Oko and Raoul Zarek.
"I'm sorry," Kellen said, face crumpling. I didn't plan any of this." Blue electricity spun around Raoul's fingers, and the sky seemed to darken above him. Behind his eyes was a building storm. He lifted his hands, fingers sparkling with magic, when the electricity suddenly fizzled. Raoul opened his mouth and blinked. "Vraska?" Oko looked over his shoulder and found his crew standing in wait. Vraska stepped forward, narrow features pinched tight. The deep scars stretched across her skin appeared more prominent in the sunlight. "I know," she said, slow and intentional, like the worst kind of poison. "You thought I was dead."
And right then, Rakdos appears, and he just kind of soars into the scene and slams down to the ground, and he attacks Raoul, kind of punches him and sends him flying. And seeing as Oko's crew has a momentary break to make their escape, they seize the chance, and Oko grabs onto Kellen and takes him with him. Vraska wonders if that's a good idea, though, but Oko.
Well, I'll just read this last part from the story, and this is actually how the story ends. Oko had never imagined himself as a father, but the boy had just helped him escape, and he'd turned on his own boss to do it. Kellen had shown loyalty without being coerced or tricked. He'd given it freely. Midway through their journey back to the saloon, Oko decided that having a son could turn out to be very useful indeed.
Typical Oko,
that makes
right?
me so mad. That makes me so mad. Like, I shouldn't be surprised. Oko's a trickster. Of course he's going to want every advantage he can have. And maybe he's just, like, delaying having an emotional response.
That's
kind of
what I was thinking, too. Yeah, it's like, maybe.
Or this is just Oko. This is just how Oko's going
to
be.
My heart is with Kellen, and I want to cheer for Kellen, and I want this father-son reunion to go well. Like, I want Oko, like, this is me being naive and hopeful, right? Like, Kellen. I want Oko to recognize his fatherly instinct beneath all of this, right? And to maybe, like, it would be shocking to discover that you had a son in the middle of this fight scene, right? You know, and Oko is a trickster fae, and it would be in his nature to try and find leverage. But, like, a part of me is just trying to hope that maybe there's something good going on in Oko. But I also know Oko, and Oko is Oko. And I don't think there is a fatherly bone in Oko's body, to be fully honest. So I am worried. I don't know how this is going to go.
My hope is that he can at least be a decent person. Right. He doesn't have to be number one dad mug father of the year. But if he can just be a decent person,
yeah,
and not put Kellen in harm's way or not make Kellen act against his own nature. But at the same time, Kellen is also fae.
Yes.
You know, and maybe Kellen does have something to learn about actually utilizing your own nature to the good of your own ends, right? Like, to making either,
right,
you know, the right choices or to making the wrong choices. But, you know, he's really got to learn that whole fae side of him. He's lived with a human his entire life up until he left his, like, home in Eldraine to go on his first quest. He had never met another fae until he met Talion the Kindly Lord. And so, you know, there's just this, like, and it's not like Talion, like, helped Kellen to, like, understand
that
who
wasn't
Kellen
Talion.
Was. No, Talion was like, here, do this thing for me. I've got my own stuff going on. And so I'm really interested to see how this plays out. But I know you're hopeful, Natalie. I'm not as hopeful.
I'm
worried.
Hopeful, but I know that that's naive of me. Right?
Yeah.
I know that that is naive of me.
I
want to
believe, but I can't.
Yeah, oh my gosh. I know a lot happened today, but unfortunately, that's all the time we have for now. We will continue our adventures in the next episode, coming to you right around the tracks.
As always, you can read this episode and many more at mtgstory.com. You can find us on all your favorite podcast platforms, as well as our audiobook versions of the full stories we release the day before our recaps drop. And those are on YouTube as well, if you want to check them out there.
Your reviews mean the world to us, so if you liked today's episode, do us a huge favor and review us on your favorite podcast platform. We are always striving to release new content y'all want, and we hear your feedback. Your support means everything, and a huge thank you for listening. Doesn't matter if today was your first episode or if you've been with us since the beginning, we appreciate all of you joining us for the ride.
We will see y'all next time, partners, but until then,
have a magical day.